Joining us, it is Sunday morning, and always a pleasure to have him here as we enter another season together, and that is, they call him the professor at the Play Ball Luncheon. He was introduced as the professor, and that is the bench coach of the San Francisco Giants, Ron Wotus. Well, how are you?
Marty, I'm doing well. Good to be with you.
Yeah, here we go again. And you heard the opening here, Giants-Dodgers. Even from your perspective on the bench, and I say it as someone who comments on it, I've watched Giants-Dodgers my whole life. It goes back to Brooklyn. You'd never, ever expect the thing to go as a game just normally unfolds. That's the only way I could say it. The unexpected is going to happen, and you've seen it the whole week.
Yeah, it's definitely lived up to the billing. There's no question about it. And I think it was Kuiper yesterday mentioned to me that we played the Dodgers last year. I think 50% of the games were decided by one run. I'm not sure if that's completely accurate or not, but that's, I believe, what he had told me. And, well, it held true again. I mean, you couldn't have two games that were any closer than the last two games that we played so far this series.
Well, I want to go back. Opening day, of course, you know, and the team is hitting. You had 12 runs, a couple of games here in the first six of the season, which is pretty good in Milwaukee. And then, of course, the one on opening day here with the avalanche happened and just didn't stop. But then you came to Friday night. And, you know, you prepare the, you know, the scouting reports and the defense and all this stuff. And here's Ross Stripling, guy who's made 14 starts in double A and A ball, coming off Tommy John. Nice pitcher, and he was a good prospect of the Dodgers. And here he comes out there and goes 7 1/3, no hit. Come on.
Yeah, well, you know, Bam Bam and Deck watched him on video. Obviously, the players got to see the starts that we could pull up on him. But obviously, we haven't seen him in the major leagues. And first time that I saw him, and I was impressed. The kid can pitch. He knows what he's doing. He's got a nice breaking ball. And he kept the ball out of the middle of the plate. And quite a performance. And as you're talking about the drama here with the Giants and Dodgers, well, the whole thing unfolded and the unexpected happened. He had a no-hitter, and here we go with that whole thing. And so it was a great game, though, for us to come back and win that game, especially after, you know, the opening day was another thriller, being down 4-0, and looked like they were cruising along. We couldn't get anything going. And then, of course, we got a couple hits, strung together a nice inning. And then the floodgates opened up for us.
Yeah, and it started with a couple of bunts. How about that, the little game?
Yeah, you know, that was great to see. Tomlinson using his head there, coming off the bench. We're down, man on first base, and he pushed the bunt to first base and got the men in scoring position. And it's amazing how a heads-up play like that, you know, something thinking about the team other than yourself, can propel you into a bigger inning, more than just getting one run.
All right, so the Stripling game, though, you know, here's a no-hitter, and the kid is, you know, on a pitch count, I guess. I don't know if everyone realized that or not. But someone could have bunted. You know, I mean, Belt had the whole left side, you know, and it is a no-hitter. You want to get on base. It's cool to do it. You know, you're within a run. Why not?
Well, I believe so. Look, everybody plays the game to win. This is Giants-Dodgers. It's the beginning of the year. He did have a no-hitter, but it's a one-run game, two-run game. You're playing to win the game. I thought it was fair game if we wanted to get on base that way. Not that they were giving it very often, and but there were a couple occasions that it presented himself. But as it turned out, it worked out just fine for us.
Yeah, what about the kid, Trevor Brown? And you run spring training. You saw a lot of Trevor Brown down there. And Susak is at Sacramento. He's playing a little bit. That wrist was a problem for him. How about Trevor Brown and what he's brought to the team and just walking into that game that night?
Yeah, well, you know, last year he did a fine job for us and really established himself as a player that can play in the big leagues. You know, he was in the minor leagues. We didn't hear a whole lot about Trevor Brown. He was on everybody's radar, but there was other players ahead of him. And he came in, got the opportunity last year, and he has done nothing to lose his job, let's say, this spring training. Handles the pitching staff extremely well. The guys love throwing to him, and he swings the bat. And, you know, something a lot of people don't know about him. If need be, he could play other positions as well. He's played second base in the minor leagues. Not that we'd start him out there, but in an emergency, it's nice to have a guy on the bench that gives you that flexibility. He can go to second. He could go to first. So he's a nice addition for us, and what a big hit. Obviously the biggest hit of his career.
Yeah, did you have a flashback to the Zimmerman game with Washington? And, you know, the story, look, they can take Zimmerman. I don't care who they bring. They can bring Koufax in or Marichal. Just get rid of Zimmerman. Did you have that flashback when they took Stripling out?
Yeah, well, you know, I did not. And probably the reason being you were so, you know, not shocked because, you know, I think Dave Roberts did the prudent thing for the pitcher, for the organization. You know, everybody knows the story at this point. He hadn't thrown more than 78 pitches. You know, when do you take him out? You know, the longer he leaves him in there, the more difficult it's going to be to get him out of there. He's already 22 pitches over his max after the Tommy John surgery. So it was a tough call for Dave Roberts, but I think he did the prudent thing. But I think everybody was thinking about that. I know I was more about the Zimmerman thing, but it couldn't have worked out better for us to have Brownie hit the home run in the next batter.
Yeah, very dramatic, very dramatic. And, of course, Pagan gets on ahead of that. Pagan's had a nice beginning of the season, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. You know, and another thing, not just offensively, but the way he's been playing left field.
Yeah.
He's played it extremely well, and I've been impressed on how shallow he's been able to play. He's been challenging the hitters in left field and has made some nice catches here in the early going.
You know what I like about him is that, you know, Ricky Henderson could do it. Bonds could do it in his prime. That's the ball down the left field line. You could get to it quickly. You could hold someone to a single. It's a big deal. Now, there was a double yesterday. I forget who got. Someone got a double on him yesterday. But generally, he gets that ball pretty quickly, and I like that.
Yeah. No, he's got good speed. You know, I think he's really enjoying playing left. I know Roberto worked hard with him this spring in left field. I know he worked hard. It was a new position for him. I seen him shagging during batting practice more than I ever seen him shag in center field. I think he really wanted to be prepared to be a good left fielder, and his hard work's paying off.
All right, opening day was Thursday here. You got to open in Milwaukee. How was Milwaukee for opening day, by the way?
It was good. I mean, it was the weather outside wasn't too pleasant, but thank goodness they have the dome and it was covered. I guess, you know, after the game, I didn't know it was even snowing outside. I couldn't see outside, but people were saying that the weather was terrible outside. We did feel it when you got up in the morning to go get a cup of coffee. If Starbucks wasn't right across the street, you weren't going more than a block because it was cold.
Yeah, they showed scenes of the snow going sideways through those windows. But you don't feel it inside at all, I guess.
No, you know, it was a little cooler. I mean, but definitely comfortable. It was definitely comfortable inside playing. They had a nice crowd on hand for the Brewers. And, you know, we got 2 out of 3, so it was a good trip for us.
Yeah, well, 2 out of 3 so far here as well. So 4-2 to start the season, and you go for a shot today. Johnny Cueto, and, of course, as I say, you run spring training down there. You got to see a lot of him. Give us a little preview for the fans who haven't seen him live yet to understand what they're going to see today.
Well, you're going to see a colorful pitcher, that's for sure. He'll give you the shimmy and the shake here and there out on the mound. And, you know, he does a lot of that stuff to just throw off the hitter's timing. And I think that's the bottom line with Johnny if you haven't seen him pitch. He's got an outstanding changeup, but he's really about disrupting the hitter's timing. He uses his fastball inside and outside. I mean, he's not afraid to pitch inside, and he mixes his pitches. He likes keeping them off balance. So, you know, people that have seen Levon Hernandez, he's got a little Levo in him, to the fact that Levo was one of the best I've ever seen at a, you know, trying to throw the hitter's timing off. If he threw a curveball and the hitter was just a little bit out in front, he'd throw the next one a little bit slower, and the hitter wouldn't be able to stay back. And Johnny has that feel, great feel. He reads the swings, and he has got a great feel on keeping the hitters off balance.
I like the way he walks off the mound. He struts off the mound, and then he takes his hat off.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's great. He is a showman.
Yes, he
let
is.
Me put it that way.
Yeah.
How about showman in baseball? And I was going to ask you about the loosest guy, you know, before a game, the most intense guy, but I don't know, let me have you think about that one for a second. The showman of baseball. And it goes to what Bryce Harper was talking about earlier. You know, it's a young person's game now. You know, they people like to act out, people like to make all sorts of gestures. Showman in baseball. You remember any?
Well, you know, it's a lot of guys, you know, they have a little color to them in different points of the season, or if they hit a home run, they're a little more dramatic here and there. But, You know, the only person that really comes to mind, it's more recent, and he wasn't a big showman, but you talk about being as loose as you possibly can be. This guy was loose before the game, he was loose after the game, and he was loose during the game. And that is Omar Vizquel. And he's a very colorful individual, not just on the baseball field, but off the baseball field, to say the least. So he was a real treat to be around. I've always said watching him take ground balls during the game, he is so nonchalant, you would think that he doesn't even care if he catches it or not. He just had such soft hands and was just so relaxed in the moment. And that's a real real key for some young guys who can get tense in the heat of the battle. He was a complete opposite and was an outstanding player.
Hall of Famer for you?
I think so. I think he led the game at his position in innings played or games started, turned himself into an outstanding hitter at the end. I mean, he early in his career, he was more of an out, but at the end of his career, he would battle you. He got a lot of big hits, but I think what he did defensively is undeniable Hall of Fame qualities.
Yeah, how'd you like hitting infield to him? It must have been fun. Now, Crawford will do all sorts of crazy things, throw the ball between his legs, around his back, and, you know, what about hitting infield to Vizquel?
Yeah, as I said, it looked like he didn't care. And, you know, he never dropped the ball. The ball always went into his glove. But where he really caught my attention a couple times was in a game. And I hadn't seen this up until this point. Never had another infielder do it. But a pop-up would go up between shortstop and left field. And immediately he'd knock his hat off. You'd see him knock his hat off, and he'd run backwards and catch the ball over his shoulder, looking straight back, Willie Mays style, but over the shoulder. And he would time it to catch it like that. Caught every one. Now, that's not the way you'd want to teach it, but he would say he'd knock the hat off so he can get a better view of the ball coming over his head. And he did that on several occasions.
That's Hall of Fame stuff. That's good. I like that. That's a good criteria for him. Who's the tensest guy you ever saw before a game? You know, a guy you just, boy, I know Vogelsong was kind of like that. He had that face before the game.
Yeah.
Hey, who's the tensest guy you ever run into?
Yeah, well, you know, Vogie was up there. There's no doubt about it. Very intense, had the game face, not just in the dugout, but from the minute you walked into the ballpark. We got here at 9 o'clock in the morning for a 1 o'clock game. You know, you didn't even want to say hello to the guy. He walked right by, he'd have his game face on. So, you know, he's at the top of the list, and probably the most ready to go. I wouldn't call it tensed, but most excited and keyed up for the game is probably Hunter Pence.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just not keyed up for himself. He gets everybody keyed up, and he brings great energy to this ball club, and it's great having a guy like him on the club.
Does he do that in a normal game? Well, you know, in other words, it's a 7:15 game, it's 10 after 7, 5 after 7. Can you hear him in the clubhouse?
Well, you always hear Hunter. I mean, anytime you talk about baseball, he gets excited. You know, I mean, he's mellow at times and can carry on a nice mellow conversation. But the closer it gets to game time, preparing to go out on the field during the game, the times when it really is important to have some energy, he brings it. It
looks like he's got a buddy in Samardzija. On the bench.
Yeah, well.
When stuff happens.
Yeah, no, you know, the Shark, he's into the game as well. I mean, every game I see him on the rail, he's pulling for his teammates. He's engaged in the game, and it's great to see, because you need guys engaged in the game. I mean, you know, in today's game, guys can go down in the cage, they can worry about their own swing, they can go look at video, the extra guys can try to watch it on TV. Mm-hmm. But it's very important for us to have the energy of your teammates watching the game, for one, you know, seeing what's going on in the field, but bringing the energy and supporting their teammates.
All right, very good. That's a good point. See, the professor, right away, your first day, that's a good point. I mean, a lot of guys want to look at video and go back and do things, but it's important to be on the bench and having that camaraderie on the bench and supporting it.
Yeah.
I agree.
We all want that, you know. You know, there's several reasons that it's important, but, you know, the most basic is, hey, be out there pulling for your teammates and trying to help each other win the game.
All right. This is the professor. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to let him think about it, but he's going to come back, and this will be our first class of the year. The new sliding rule into second base. We'll see what the bench coach has to say about that. And we'll talk about the rule as it's written and how it's being applied. And, boy, if you're a runner going into second base today, Ron will tell you what he thinks you have to do to get past this rule. More coming up right here at KNBR 680, the sports leader. All right, we've got baseball today. The weather similar to yesterday, but nowhere near as rainy. And this thing should start on time and clear up a little bit before game time. So look forward to having you out here. We'll be out at the patio at 10 o'clock today for Weekends in the Park. Patrick is out there now. So it's game four of this series. Giants have taken 2 of 3. Cueto and Kazmir. It is Sunday morning. We're joined by the professor, Ron Wotus. Well, maybe the biggest change, and this is the catching change that happened a couple of years ago, and this year we had the slide in the World Series where everyone, Tejada, well, it was in the playoff there with the Mets and the Dodgers when Utley took Tejada out, and baseball has overreacted once again and now created a sliding rule into second base, and some games have been changed because of a final play at the end of the game on this sliding rule. How do you see it, and what's going on? How do you teach your runners what to do here?
Well, to your point, it's definitely a big adjustment, just as it was with the catcher. We saw multiple games and a lot of controversy on calling guys out or safe because where the catcher was at that point in time. And they tweaked that rule since then to make it a little bit better. Second base is the same thing. We're trying to keep the middle infielders healthy, so the intent of the rule is outstanding. But I still think that there's some things that are left to interpretation that are a little bit unclear at this point in time. And we'll be interested to see if they tweak it. Now, you know, the thing, you have to attempt to stay on the base. You know, I think that's a good thing. But if you have to remain on the base or attempt to reach the base with your hand and stay on it, it's very difficult to take out the runner. If you slide to the side and you go beyond that base, they say you have to attempt and be able to stay on it, and you leave that base, they can call you out. That's an extremely difficult slide to make, trying to get the fielder and hold on to the base, because typically you slide beyond the base to do that. So having said that, I think at this point in time, we've seen some games end on interference calls.
Yeah.
And it's a big adjustment, because from day one, these players played the game. They're taught to try to get in the path, deviate from the your running to try to get in the path of the throw by the first baseman. Or if not that, you're taught to go at the infielder on whatever side of the base he's going to come across. And it's not a given that if the second baseman's taking the throw that he's going to come on the inside part of second base. Good second basemen sometimes would come across the bag, sometimes they stay behind the bag, and you can never take them out. Because they were elusive. They would go one way or the other. You think they're going to come in, they go out. And that was the beauty of being a second baseman and being good at it. So, you know, you have to deviate a little bit to try to go to that side. And I think that's where the gray area is as well, trying to stay on the base in deviation. So I'm getting long-winded here.
Yeah.
But I guess the bottom line is, Marty, at this point in time, I think it's best in everybody's best interest right now to try to slide straight into the base as you do at any other base. So breaking up the double play has become definitely secondary to not being called for interference.
Boy, it's interesting because we saw Rasmus slide past the bag. It was like on the bag, though, but he went past the bag and he got called for interference. I guess it's, to me, what's going to happen, I think, when this is tweaked, and we saw it with the play at the plate as well, it's the odd-looking play. In other words, if it looks like you're going to get the fielder and you have no intention of being able to or wanting to or attempting to stay on the base, then I think you're going to be called. I think that's where we're going. Because you have to be able to slide towards the fielder, because that's what baseball is all about. But if it looks like one of those where you're going and scissoring your legs or doing something that looks like you're going to get the guy with no intention of ever staying on the base,
right?
Then I think this is the deviation. I think that's where it's going.
Well, that would be that
I
would
think
make
that's
sense.
Where it's going.
That would make sense because, in my opinion, as I just stated, it's very difficult to go at the runner and stay on the base with your arm. You're not going to stay on the base with your legs because you got to reach out with your hand. And typically you're going to slide beyond that base. So, you know, that's somewhat what the rule was in the past, though, Marty, what you're saying it's going to. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I know at this point in time, we're almost better off sliding straight into the base until we get a clearer picture of what they're going to call and what they're not going to call.
And stay on the base, I guess.
Yes, you have to stay on the base.
Is that what you're telling
people?
We're
telling guys to stay on the base. Well, you don't want to go beyond because, again, that's a gray area. Attempt to stay on the base. Well, I've talked to a couple umpires, and if you go beyond that base, it says able in attempt to stay on the base in the rule. And to me, if you come off that base, I'm still not quite sure what they're going to call. They're probably going to call you out.
Got it. Now, the second, you had a problem the other day with panic, was called for not touching the base. The second base, the so-called neighborhood play. How do you teach this now?
Well, you have to be more aware of making sure you're on the base. Again, I think that, we've always tried to touch the base as a middle infielder. But in your practice and when you're working on it, you have to make sure you stay on the base. You know, last year we were in a situation because of the neighborhood play that we were teaching our guys to go ahead and cheat. If Panic's throwing crawl on a feed on a double play and it's a perfect throw, well, he can cheat a foot towards first base because it's the neighborhood play. And that was really unfair as well. And you're off the base, and it may get the guy at first base by a foot.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to stay on the base. And the naked eye doesn't see it for me. And, you know, the downside to these rule changes are that we are now looking at video replay at second base every time there's a play. Every double play turn, we're looking to see if the guy kept his foot on the base because it happened so quick. And every slide, we're taking a look to see if he interfered, if it was a legal slide. So now, last year we had first base. Now we have second base, and that's going to slow the game down.
Yeah, and now in thinking about this, Ron Motis with us, of course, school in session here with the professor. It seems like baseball is forcing the fielder to stay on the base longer, and it's forcing the runner to slide into the base directly. So that's where they want the collision. They don't want the collision on the side of the base or on either side of the base. They want, if you're going to break up the double play, here's the deal. The fielder's going to be there. He's got to touch the bag. And if you could get there and bust it up that way, fine. If you have to go out to get him, we're not going to allow that. So they're forcing the fielder to stay on the bag.
Well, that's where it's going. You know, the fielder's going to have to stay in the bag long enough to touch it, but then he will clear himself, whether it's the second baseman coming across or the shortstop coming across. They will clear themselves. But in essence, the rule is doing what they wanted it to do. And honestly, I don't see how you're going to be able to take out the middle infielder unless he's staying right on the base, which you're going to clear yourself after you touch the base. But you better make sure that you do touch second base in the double play.
All right, we'll see what happens. But, you know, the interesting part is, you know, they cut down, you know, a pitching coach now has got 30 seconds to get to the mound, they get back, and, you know, all this stuff, so you save, you know, 12 seconds. So, meanwhile, you get a review of a play at second could take 4 minutes, could take 240 seconds. And so you've just lost 240 seconds, and you save 12 seconds by making Dave Righetti run out to the mound.
Yeah, well, maybe if they cut the game down to 7 innings... we can get this thing back on track. You know, the 30-second rule, I think it's forcing managers, you know, the intent of this rule was for people not to stall, which was slowing down the game, right? The old way, there's no time clock in baseball, and we all used it. That was, you know, that was how you managed the game in your bullpen. You don't want to get the guy up too early. So now, all of a sudden, your pitcher gets in trouble. Now you got a chance to get your guy up in the bullpen, but you give that slow walk, that Lou Piniella walk, that Walt Weiss first year walk out to the mound, and you take your time and you finally get to the mound, and then you stay out there and make the home plate umpire come out. Before you know it, 2 minutes have gone by. So this is what they're trying to clean up, and it's going to work. So I think most pitching coaches, you know, are probably okay with it. I think they probably want a little more time at certain circumstances during the game. But if they jog out there real quick, they're going to have to get their point in and get the heck out of there.
Yeah, you can't say very much. You know, you got to call the whole infield in. You got to talk very quickly. Does Dave taking like speed speaking or anything?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'll have to check with him.
Yeah, if he's upped his game at all. Looking at another rule that changed was the tag with the laces of the glove. Did that come up that often? They say now if the laces touch but not the leather of the glove, there's no tag. Did that come up that often? I don't know.
I don't know how often it came up, but it did come up. I know Sean Dunston and Chad Chop, you know, we were looking for that. And, of course, players in the past, you know, they changed the rule on the glove as well. I think it was last year. You know, the lace can only be a certain length. Before, guys would have that lace, some of them would have it 8-9 inches long. And then all of a sudden, it's an extension of your glove, and it, you could use it in the tag. I know it came up a couple times that I had saw last year where he got tagged with the lace. So I think that's a good rule change. I don't think that's going to impact the speed of the game or anything. So I think that's a minor adjustment that is going to work well.
Isn't baseball great? I mean, seriously. You know, first, we had the spring training thing with Bumgarner and Hayward, you know, and at the plate and Fowler, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And everyone's always looking for an edge. So a player gets a glove and makes the laces 12 inches so he can just swipe the lace at somebody. You're always looking for an edge in baseball. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, you really are. And, I mean, you think about it. I mean, I think back to when I was coming up and trying to make it to the big leagues. You know, as a professional athlete, you want an edge. You want to do something to get yourself to the major leagues. And once you get there, you want to be the best. You know, these guys want to be the best at what they do. And any advantage they could get personally and any advantage you can get as a team. I mean, it's such a team-oriented. You're here to win. You know, you're as much as you want to have success at yourself, you're here to win the game. Right. And the teams that play the win and not worry about personal goals usually are a much better club.
Yeah, I agree with you. We're going to, our next subject, I'm going to talk a lot about that, how you guys play to win every inning, every game. It's noticeable. You got that core group, sort of like the Yankees in the 90s. You know, belts tied up now. You've got that core group tied up. And well, let's see how that works out. But I've noticed that as well. One last thing for you. You're going to Colorado. And I know you prepare the shifts and everything else. And you think about Colorado. First, the shortstop. Get ready for him. Story. He's got 6 home runs, what, in 5 games already. He's done a pretty nice job. That's number one. But number two, they've changed the outfield fences. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I saw they've extended the fence in right center, I believe. I don't think it's in left center. I haven't seen it. But in right center it goes. It's quite a bit higher. I don't know if it's doubled in height. I don't think it's going to still stop that ball from going over the fence over there. But, you know, it's going to have more triples in the park. Obviously, it's going to keep more balls in the park. And, you know, Colorado is a tough place, you know, for the outfielders. It's a big, big outfield. And now, you know, they're going to have more balls. They're going to have to chase down in the gap. There's going to be more relay plays. So our infielders will be alert that, you know, they had that high wall in right field in Colorado. The ball would bounce off there. But now you have chain link, a double height fence all the way across. So they're going to have to go out and they're going to have to be ready for that play. But it shouldn't be a big adjustment at all.
Interesting. I will let you go with this, but I guess the relays, you do have to go out there further, huh? Well, what's typical? How far out do you typically go here? Or maybe in Colorado, you got to go out a lot further.
Well, it depends on the park. I mean, obviously here in San Francisco with Triples Alley, and it depends on, are you going to go out a lot further than you do if it has a normal right center field? But, you know, you base it off the outfielder's arm. So, you know, if you got strong arms in the outfield, you want them to make the long throw. And certainly we got a strong arm in Brandon Crawford. We want to get the ball in his hands. If you have a weaker arm in the outfield, you're going to go out further. Yeah. And if the outfielder catches the ball, you know, on a dead stop, if he's picking it up at the fence and just turns with no momentum, you got to go out further. So you adjust on the play and the outfield arm. But, you know, we have the deep gap here. It doesn't get any deeper than our ballpark, so we're prepared for it.
Yeah, tell that to Belt.
Yeah.
Come on. He hit 420 and a half.
I know. It's tough for these guys. They hit that. They hit that in Colorado. It's in the upper deck.
It's in Kansas, as John Miller would say. All right. Great to see you. Good opening week, huh? Crazy baseball, huh? All week?
Yeah.
Do you follow what's going on all over the place?
Yeah, I try to. You don't always have the time to see everything, but, you know, we have the channel on. Yeah, you know, he's not off to his typical start, and That's what makes baseball so entertaining, right? You just never know. You can't put it on the team on paper and say you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You got to go out and play the game.
Isn't it amazing? And that's why we say that's baseball.
That's baseball.
All right, very good. Well, thanks so much. Have a good trip, and we'll see you, guy. You go to Colorado, and then the Dodgers. We see you back here for the Marlins and the return of the hitting coach of Barry Bonds. How about that?
Sounds good, Marty.
All right, thanks so much. All right, that's the bench coach of the Giants, Ron Wotus. More coming up. KNBR 680, the sports leader.